Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
I know. We typically air on Friday nights from 8 to 10 p.m., but Friday was already booked, so we decided to air the show tonight and play it back at a later time. The information tonight is so informative. I wanted to put it on as soon as possible and get the information out to somebody who may be facing the situation in their life right now and hopefully make their Christmas. We're talking about saving your home from foreclosure. With over 1 million homes seized in 2010, were all of those foreclosures legal? My guess says no. Can you get your home back? if they foreclosed upon you illegally? My guess says yes. It's going to be a great show tonight, y'all, because not only is he going to tell us what the banks did wrong, but he is also going to show us how we can profit big time from what they did. This sounds too good to be true. But my guest is Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown. He's president and founder of AmeriDreams Educational Concepts. He's an ex-mortgage broker and ex-home builder. He started out helping people obtain the American dream, then found himself having to help these same people maintain their homes. Well, before we introduce him, we want to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.AfricanAmericanNewsAndCommentary.com. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, help me welcome to the stage for the very first time, Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown. Good evening, Mr. Brooks Brown. How are you?
Good evening. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. Listen, this topic has like been with me all week, and I've been trying to wrap my mind around just how crazy this all sounds. And you and I both know mortgage can be a very intimidating topic for a lot of people because there's a lot of terminology that not everybody understands. So we're going to try to take the audience slow tonight and present this in a way that they can follow, if we're lucky, and see themselves how they could possibly save themselves if they're facing this situation. So I was thinking, how do I present this? I was thinking this today. How do I present this in a way that they can follow? So what I thought, if we could show them from the beginning, when someone initially buys a home through a lender, let's just say like a Bank of America, you know, a lot of times when you buy that home, before you know it, in 6 years you've had three or four lenders. So let's start with when you closed on that loan with that lender and you went from your first mortgage lender to your second mortgage lender to your third mortgage lender, what was supposed to be happening with your paperwork as it was changing hands from one lender to another?
Okay, well, that's a great starting point to understanding a mortgage, number one. And I want to just make a brief statement here. Basically, how mortgages came to be, and then we understand it, then I really address your situation that you mm-hmm. asked for that question. Mm-hmm. You may think that mortgages basically originated from banks and lending institutions, but it did not. You know, lawyers 150 years ago were basically responsible for making sure that property titles were registered accurately in the property records in whatever county or whatever these properties were in. And it became apparent through the court system that a number of people were losing their homes because of the titles were not being recorded correctly and properly. Okay, in 1874, Pennsylvania enacted the first statute authorized the issuance of title insurance. So basically the insurance industry started this. Now, during the 1900s and early 1930s, the title insurance industry began to grow rapidly. The insurers were able to convince third-party lenders that title insurance was necessary for the financing of residential properties. All right, but mortgages back then were not as they are now. In many cases, a person applying for a mortgage had to have 80% down payment. Mm-hmm. And the term of the mortgage was only 3 to 5 years, with interest being the only payments that they would pay, just interest only. Mm-hmm. And then they'd have a balloon that they'd have to pay. But the insurance companies were gambling that these people would not have the balloons, and which during the Depression time, they didn't have jobs, so they did not have the money to satisfy the balloons. And then basically they would end up gambling and you'd lose your property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but to stimulate the economy, after the Great Depression in the 1930s, they decided, okay, let's do this better, a better way. Let's make it where they have 20% down, and then we'll finance the 80%, and therefore they'd have lower payments. And we'll stretch the term out, you know, 15 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but at the same time, it's, the insurers were involved, and they brought that idea to the banks. And it sounded good to the banks because now the banks could have guaranteed money with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, FHA, and so on, insuring these particular loans for this long term of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they could make a lot of money off of fees and so on, okay? And that's how this thing started. And over the years, when a person takes out a mortgage and you go to that bank to address your starting question, what would you, a person expect, they basically find a property they want, get with a real estate agent, go to the bank and apply for a loan. And they would look at that person's credit to determine what they could afford, look at their income, and also look to see if they had a down payment of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
That was the American dream, being able to save up a down payment. That was a big thing that most people just could not do. And, so you'd save that down payment up, you pay your down payment, and then you'd sign your papers for the balance of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
You pledged the property in the event that you did not pay, that they could actually foreclose and take that loan.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would happen, they would give you a note and a security instrument called a deed of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And trusting that you're going to make the payments. And if you don't, there's a trustee there to foreclose on you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And each state had laws that they had to follow before they could foreclose on you. And that's
mm-hmm.
where you have judicial and non-judicial laws and so on, which we'll probably talk about later. But what you would expect normally is that the bank would hold your note and deed of trust, and as you made your payments, at some point you would pay that property off or you would sell that property.
This was in a day in which you'd only have one lender.
That is correct.
Okay.
One lender. Okay.
But that's not the case today.
That's not the case today. But even if in those days that lender decided to sell your loan to another mortgage company, a bank, both documents followed and the same rules were enacted and that agreement continued on. Okay. But in this day and time, the banks do not hold the notes anymore. Okay. Making money on interest, it takes them too long to make money on interest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they found a faster, quicker way so that they could actually get out of the lending business and not have that exposure and risk of having lent that note, and bought that business now to the open market, such as pension funds and other people that wanted investments and could make an interest over time. Okay.
I'm trying not to take them too fast. So where I'm going with that question is, if I close today,
okay,
let's just say with Bank of America,
okay,
and let's just say in 6 years I've had three different lenders that I've been writing my mortgage payment out to. What was supposed to happen from the time that I guess what we're trying to understand is how is what they're doing considered illegal? So we're
okay.
trying to understand what happened, what was supposed to happen with that paperwork. It was supposed to follow, like you just said, from one lender to the next lender to the next lender.
Right.
So in some kind of way that's not happening today. Tell us what is happening.
Okay, well, normally you'd stay with maybe one lender, one bank or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, they may hire another company to just service the payment and
mm-hmm.
be making your payment to another entity.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, in turn, just collect your payment as a service, and then they would forward your payment to the people holding the note, which was normally the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they may go through three or four different service companies who could ever give them the best price on servicing. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and therefore, it didn't really mean that your note had been sold to another bank or lending institution.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, you really thought that you were still with the original lender that gave you the money. In a lot of cases, you were. That's the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But things have now since changed. Okay? That was the way it was supposed to have been done. And then once again, once you pay that mortgage down off after 6 years or whatever, they give you a new payoff amount. You had accumulated some equity, and hopefully the property value had risen. And it was a great thing. It was a great investment that we called at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But now, and since 2000, things have really changed. Starting in the year 2000, they created this thing called securitization.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference now with securitization, what the banks do, they create a note and create as many notes as possible. Then they package those notes up, maybe 1,000 notes at a time. And then these notes were put together and called into a security item that they would in turn sell off on the secondary market to investors. Okay, so now the banks are not holding the notes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may still be collecting your payments, but they would actually be sending those payments to those so-called investors that invested in your note.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when this really kind of got, you know, illegal, all right,
mm-hmm.
because now it's not just a loan and a note anymore. You've included rules and regulations of the Securities Exchange Commission. So, therefore, now we have a new set of investors
mm-hmm.
investing in your note.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you did sign that security document giving somebody the right to enforce the note in the event you didn't pay. So those two documents now have been separated, the note and the security instrument. In the past,
mm-hmm.
the way that it should be, they should always stay together because you can't enforce one without the other.
Okay. So let's stop there. So that answers my question. The, during this process of going from, you know, one lender to another lender, they're losing the documents. So in losing the documents, that makes it very difficult, or should make it very difficult, for them to foreclose upon you, right?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're losing the documents. A lot of times, in like 2000, when most of these new lenders came on the block, these were brand new companies such as Argent Mortgage, New Century Mortgage, Accredited, mm-hmm. companies that we had never heard of before that were giving mm-hmm. these great mortgage products that we really didn't have too much qualify for. Mm-hmm. But these companies somehow went out of business around 2007 and 2008, all of them. It's about 300.
The subprime lenders.
Yeah, the subprime lenders.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when that took place, a lot of paperwork wasn't done. A lot mm-hmm. of assignments wasn't done. But what they did to, I guess, protect themselves against that, they made the beneficiary of all these deeds of trust, they named a company called MERS, which stands for Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems.
Okay, slow down and repeat that again and speak up just a little bit.
Okay. What the lenders did, mm-hmm. since they went out of business, I guess they already knew they were going to be out of business, they made the beneficiaries on the deeds of trust that enforced these notes. In the event that you didn't pay, mm-hmm. they created a company called MERS, M-E-R-S. So mm-hmm. it stands for Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems.
Okay.
And what their job was to basically record the deeds of trust and notes and keep track of all the notes across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, instead of just only not just being the recorders of these this information, they somehow became the beneficiaries of these deeds of trust, over 62 million, which is approximately 60% of all mortgage loans in the United States. Now, that creates a big problem. Who is MERS?
Yeah, who is MERS?
Okay.
What is MERS? Well,
all
we
right.
know what MERS is, but who is MERS?
Okay. Well, MERS is a portal, an electronic registration company that's supposed to track deeds. Now, who owns MERS? Who are the shareholders? Well, the shareholders are Bank of America, yeah. Wells Fargo, Citibank, mm-hmm. Chase, Household Bank, American Tower Company, Stewart
mm-hmm.
Tower Company,
mm-hmm.
AIG Insurance Company, EMI
mm-hmm.
Insurance Company.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and several
right.
other companies, okay? Now, back around 2005 is when they, I guess, originated this company, and they all became partners and shareholders in this particular company for mm-hmm. this same particular reason, to basically record deeds of trust and titles and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also want this company to be in position to enforce the notes.
Mm-hmm.
But this company did not own the notes. So therefore, mm-hmm. and they didn't have possession of the notes, so therefore they really can't legally enforce a note that they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's why it creates a problem now. So now they have to figure out, well, where is the paperwork? Did the originating company that made MERS the beneficiary, do they still have the note? Well, no, they don't, because they're out of business. Well, what happened to the note? Well, the note got securitized. It's in a trust somewhere, supposedly, to, you know,
mm-hmm.
to me. Well, What is the trust? Who owns this trust? Who's investors of this trust? Well, it's basically people's pension funds that actually stepped in and invested in these notes. Also, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is the government, which is us, the people. We invested over $200 billion in a return on these particular notes.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, when it comes to enforcement now and trying to find the paperwork, now the paperwork exists, okay? And without the paperwork being not existing, who now has the power to enforce these notes, okay? Who has the power to even collect on the monthly payments? Who has the power to release that lien once this house is sold or even paid off? Who has the power to even give you a modification? Because most people can't get a modification. They don't understand why. It's because we don't really know who has the power to give it to you. Okay,
let's start there. So, again, like we said, we're going to try to take you slow. So let's just say 6 years into my note, and I've paid three different lenders. I've written my mortgage payment out to three different lenders. Year 7, I start getting into trouble. I lose my job, and I start getting into trouble. What is the first thing I do when I realize I'm 60 days behind? Should I contact my mortgage company and say, or I'm going into my, you know, I'm going to be 60 days behind. Should I contact my lender and ask for a modification, or is there something else that I should be doing?
Well, the natural thing to do would be to contact the lender because
mm-hmm.
you feel like, well, hey, he's the one I'm making the payments to. He's the one that I can't pay, so he's the one got to be able to be in a position to help me.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Well, he's not really the lender, though. He's just a servicer, okay,
wow.
of a particular note. So we ask these services, you know, for a modification, and they tell us, okay, there's many programs out there, but we need to send all of our financial information into them so that they could approve us for a modification to see if we could afford one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that's very unfair because a lot of these mortgages that we had taken out, we were able to do stated income or no-doc income or 100% financing, didn't have to put any down payment. So basically, if you didn't have to qualify to buy, now why all of a sudden, 6 or 7 years later, you have to qualify now to modify?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when your circumstances have changed and your credit has gotten bad and so on. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So therefore, they tell us to fill out this paperwork and send it in. Well, most homeowners, what we do, we fill it out and we send it in. We're trying to see if they're going to give us a decision. And you send that paperwork in, they tell you, well, they lost the paperwork. And you say, well, okay, well, I can understand that. I'll send it in again. Well, you send it in a second time. Then they tell you, well, we got most of it, but you omitted a couple pieces. Okay, then they'll ask you, okay, well, send those pieces to us. You send those pieces to them. Then they come back and tell you, well, we're still reviewing your loan modification. Well, this goes on for months and months and months. And then they'll come back and they'll tell you, okay, well, I tell you what, we're going to put you on a temporary modification. You
mm-hmm.
pay a certain amount for maybe 90 days while we review your process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you make those few payments, and then you come back and say, am I approved? Then they still tell you, well, no, you're not approved, or you have probably been denied.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, now you're 12 months behind, and there's no way for you to catch up. And you say, well,
mm-hmm.
why would they do that? You know, when I applied for a mortgage, they didn't lose my paperwork. When I sent the paperwork in for them to give me the loan, they were right on top of it. They approved me. And so, but why all of a sudden now they can't seem to, figure out what my problem is and help me here. Well,
but it's really not in their best interest to modify you, really, is it? Because it seems like if they modify you, they're really getting in deeper with their investors.
Well, they are. You know, it's not really in their best interest to modify you, but what they do, since the government has different programs out here like HEMP that President Obama, introduced, they would actually get a fee for everyone that they modified,
mm-hmm.
if that particular servicer would participate with Obama's program. So
mm-hmm.
what the servicer would do would go back to the investor and ask
mm-hmm.
the investor, are you willing to participate? Now, most of us here, we don't know that we are investors if we have a pension fund.
Mm-hmm.
That money has been invested into mortgage-backed securities. So
mm-hmm.
The investor looks at the deal and they say, well, no, we don't want to participate in that particular program. But
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't an investor participate? Well, think about it. When these loans were originated and the initial investment was made by the investors, they were told that if these people go into default, there's insurance to guarantee your money and you get your money in full.
Oh, wow.
So if we put you into default, that means you're going to get an automatic payment. You're going to get all your money instead
wow.
of getting your money in pieces. Okay? So therefore, most investors say no. But the banks are scared to come back because they make their money by servicing these loans. They get paid for collecting for the investor, and they get paid by charging the consumer fees for collection. So,
but okay, let's talk about that HARP program that the government, that the president first started. I think that one is defunct now. But that one helped, like, I understand, less than 1% of the people that were in foreclosure?
Well, it was a great program, I feel. If the investors could understand the participation, if they had participated, it would have stimulated them receiving some payments. But most investors still just couldn't understand why should we participate in this, because this is our money, this is our investment funds, and that program is not going to pay us the way we're supposed to have been getting paid from our initial investment. And therefore, we refused to participate, and therefore, since the investors didn't participate, it didn't really go the way that it should have gone, okay, to help, the people. Now, that little small percent that it did help, I think it really did help them, but it was such a small percent that it really didn't impact the economy that we have, and therefore, that's why we're feeling it now in the economy like we are today. Okay, and now they've come up with the HEMP. They've come up with a refinancing program that Obama approved, I guess, about a month ago, stating that if you are carrying on your mortgage and you're upside down on your home,
mm-hmm.
they will allow you to refinance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can refinance and bring the value of your home back down to what it should be and get a better.
Okay, we talked about this a little off the air yesterday. When you say upside down, for those that may not be familiar with that term, that just means that you owe more on your house than what it's worth. And I asked Cedric when we were talking about upside down yesterday, being upside down in your home yesterday, how upside down could you be? Does that mean that if I'm $5,000 upside down in my property, let's just say I currently owe $75,000 on it and it's worth $70,000 today, will they give me a modification on that? Or are we talking about if I currently owe $100,000 on my home and is now, valued at $75,000. So I think, to me, it would seem really scary if they were modifying everybody. So I'm sure there's probably some specifics on that, don't you?
Well, there's definitely some specifics. Keep in mind now, the original paperwork that you signed at closing is the original.
Mm-hmm.
Even
mm-hmm.
if you modify, that's mm-hmm. a side agreement from the original paperwork. It don't actually change the original agreement that you had
mm-hmm.
okay, in place. So now that's why they either have to allow you to refinance to create brand new paperwork, or if they modify you, all parties must sign off on that modification, such as the investor, the servicer, and everyone that's involved, so that they do, all parties know that this has been modified. And if you keep these terms, and when they modify, what they do, they take the back payments that you have, and they may stick them on the back of your loan.
Right.
They will let you pay a lesser interest rate, but they're really just trying to stimulate some kind of payments to get things moving again for you, and hopefully in the future things will improve. They know in the future you're going to default again, and you know still insured, so they've gotten a little bit more money out of you before you went into default. But you got to keep in mind, you know, the word mortgage basically is it means dead, okay, and that thing has to die at some point, either through foreclosure, refinancing, or basically you paying it off, okay? And, you know, it gets very complicated to understand what people are putting themselves up against to finance a property, because this is the largest debt that we normally take on. And then when that debt is not worth it anymore, you owe more on the house. Say you owe $150 on the house, and the house is worth $100,000. It's kind of hard for you to make payments on that, because it's like buying a car that's not worth it. And you know, and therefore your neighbors are moving in, paying less than what you owe. So why should you continue to pay that higher amount? So
okay, we're gonna take a call in just a second. But what I wanted to fast forward to, just so we can follow the way the events go, so that we can get to a certain point before we take our first caller, is this. Okay, so the loan modification didn't go through, and they end up saying that they're going to foreclose on me. Okay, that is when a company like yours can step in. Okay, so you say that there's certain things that the customer should do or should request from their current lender that can kind of put the ball or start the ball to rolling. So kind of give us an idea of what that is. You know, they didn't give me a modification, and now I'm 120 days behind. They're sending me foreclosure paperwork. What should I be doing?
Okay, what you should do at that point, you know, you have to realize, number one, there's laws on your side to protect you, such
mm-hmm.
as the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. But most of us don't understand what that law is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back and look through your paperwork, you're going to see a lot of stuff to say RESPA. Well, that
mm-hmm.
law is designed to protect consumers and give consumers rights
mm-hmm.
against services, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So services are also regulated by the RESPA law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens there, what you should do, instead of panicking, because a lot of different companies are going to send you mail, most bankruptcy attorneys are going to prey on you and say, hey, bankruptcy is the way for you to go.
Mm-hmm.
File bankruptcy, and we will, you know, get your payment started again, and we will force the bank to take the arrearages over time, up to 60 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, but really that option is not the best option in most cases. But then you have another option where you get these other companies to approach you as modification companies,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to try to sell to you, and you're probably going to open one of those letters, and you're going to call them, and they're going to say they need $3,000 to $5,000, and they will guarantee to get you a modification that you couldn't get. Well, you've already been, you know, turned down for a modification, and believe me, there's nothing they can do to change that investor's mind. Based on what you've done the best you could do, and you gave them what they asked for, and they still said no. So
mm-hmm.
what is this company going to give them that's going to be different than what you're going to give them, okay? So what you should do now is understand what the law is. Most people are not educated. Our company steps in, and what we do, we're not a modification company.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a company that say we're going to do a short sale for you to help you sell the property and to get out from under it and so on. What we do, we're an education company, and we want to educate you to the RESPA law, because that law says if you have a problem, what you should do now is send a qualified written request to your servicer. Well, what is a qualified written request?
Let me back up. This information is available on one of the closing documents that they closed on, right? That's the transfer and servicing disclosure. What you're talking about is available, or that information is on there, right?
That is correct. That servicing and transfer disclosure, which is one piece of paper that you sign that tells you how the lender should operate when they transfer the servicing or transfer the ownership of that note, what
mm-hmm.
they must do. And it also tells you if you ever needed to make a complaint, you should do it under a qualified written request. And that's where that information is at. That's the only place out of all the documents that you sign that's going to tell you what to do if you had to make a complaint against the lender about the servicing or about any questions that you may have about your mortgage. Okay.
Okay.
So what we've done, we've created, since they give that portal and that law there, it says that the servicer must respond to you within 20 days that they receive your complaint
mm-hmm.
in writing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it also tells you they have up to 60 days to address that in writing, whatever your problem is, or to fix that problem that you have brought to their attention. It also says they cannot report you to the credit bureau for any overdue payments during that time period. And the last thing it says that if they omit and violate any of this by not acknowledging the 20 days, not fixing this within 60 days and reporting you to the credit bureau, they now owe you monetary damages on each and every violation that they violated. Okay? So that's where you should start. Now, the next thing is the attorney. It's going to get involved, and now they've hired this attorney firm to collect his debt or foreclose on you. All right? How do you address that attorney? Well, there's other laws, such as the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, that these attorneys must follow because they're a debt collector now.
Mm-hmm.
But when they send you that notice of default, well, it tells you that you can dispute that default, and you can ask that they validate that debt. And what you want to ask them is certain things, such as, where is the original note? Number two, give me a payment history on this account since day one to present. Number three, provide any assignments to show me how many times this loan has been sold and to who. And you need to ask them, who is the original investor of this note?
Now I'm asking who this question again?
You want to know who the investor is.
Okay.
You also want to know, where is your original note and can you see it?
Okay.
You also want to see any and all assignments that have taken place since the origination of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to give you a payoff and a payment history.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you have this information that normally they can't give you, and the reason they can't give it to you because they're just a servicer and they don't know what really went on with this loan.
Mm-hmm.
But the law says that they have to give you this information as either a debt collector or as a servicer. And if they don't provide you this information, they have not validated your note, your loan, and they can't enforce that loan until they do.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so in a lot of cases, let me pause you right there. In a lot of cases, they're foreclosing on you, and these procedures have not the procedures are not being followed like you just explained. But they're foreclosing anyway. But the customer typically does not know their rights. Is that what I'm understanding is happening?
And since the bank asks the customer for everything, the customer don't know what to ask the bank for.
Mm.
Okay, because see, a lot of times we make our mortgage payments, and we get a letter saying they've taken over this loan, we need to start paying a new person. Well, at that point, we should stop and ask, how did you get here? Can I see your servicing agreement to show that you have the right to collect this money on behalf of the original investor? But no one ever does that. We just start to pay whoever tells us to pay them, okay? And we have not because we ask not, but we know not what to ask. Right?
Wow.
This is what we teach you, the things that you need to know about your debt, all right? It's kind of like buying a car. A lot of times we don't understand what the manual says, and until we have a problem, that's when we finally stop and go to the manual. Well, you know, with the mortgage, you know, up front they ask you, you know, you can go get an attorney if you want to review the documents. All of us say, no, we don't need an attorney. And we sign the papers and we get ourselves in a situation. And we don't understand the situation that we've gotten ourselves into. The only thing we understand is payments, but it's about a lot more than just the payments that we're making, okay?
Okay.
And this is what we want to educate you on. So you need to do a qualified written request. You need to do a dispute of debt. And one last thing that we recommend that you do is get a securitization audit. Since we're not audit specialists, I mean securitization specialists, we need to have someone that is a specialist that can tell us what happened to our mortgage, what happened to our note, who has the power to enforce this. Even though we're asking the lender and the servicer for this information, we need to have a third party to tell us also.
Okay, who can do a securitization audit? Who can do that?
Well, anyone that has a mortgage can order one, but you have securitization audit companies that get information from the Securities and Exchange Commission, which
mm-hmm.
is public information about the performance of stocks and so on, and they can actually tell you what went on with your particular note
mm.
and how it is performed and what investor it belongs to and what the county recording says, who has the right to enforce it. It tracks where your note is gone, and it normally proves that the people that are trying to enforce your note don't have standing to do so.
And what does something like this typically cost?
Normally, most audits, if you go to an audit company, they want to charge you $2,000, $2,500, you know, to do an audit for you. But, you know, what we have done, we use our bargaining power, and we can get these audits in volume. We get that price down to, you know, $1,000 or less. Okay.
So, if you just tuned in, you've come center stage for tonight's topic, save your home even after foreclosure. We're talking to Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown, founder of A Marriage Ream Educational Concepts out of Dallas. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at African American News and Commentary.com. We're going to pause now and take a phone call because I hate to keep you guys holding, but with so much information to get done. And we're going to go to area code 267-357. Good evening, you're on center stage. 267-357? Again, 267-357. Okay, we're going to close their line. We're not sure what's going on with that, but that's it. Okay, so we've come to a point where we've bought the house. 7 years later, we've gotten behind on the house. We've asked for a modification. They didn't give us a modification. They're talking about foreclosure, and we're to the point where you said we need to ask for a securitization audit.
Correct.
Okay, so what happens after that?
Okay, well, after you get your securitization audit and you see the violations that were done when this loan was not properly securitized, well, that's something that you use in your favor. When you also look at the fact that they didn't follow the RESPA guidelines and made those violations, you now have evidence from a couple of different sources, from the QWR, Qualified Written Request process, the dispute of debt process through the attorney, and also now the third party, the audit firm. So now basically what you've done is a miniature discovery that they use in a court of law to discover the truth about your situation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're finding out now, since the banks don't have the documents, a lot of times what they have, started to do is create documents now after the fact. That's the robo-signing.
Okay, now how does the lenders go about doing robo-signing?
Okay, well, normally you bring it to their attention when you ask for certain documents, and they look in your file and realize that they don't have it. So now what they have to do is try to produce that document. And since it wasn't produced in a timely manner that it should have been in the beginning when you originate this note, they have to think of a way now to produce that document. So they've actually reverted to now creating documents through forgery. They actually have what you call, forgery mills that they've set up across the country. And they have people in there signing as vice presidents of banks and secretaries and assistant secretaries that are creating these documents that they needed to fill in the gaps, okay?
Yeah.
And that has become a big thing now. I know 60 Minutes, if you watch them, they had a big special about this, and they investigated an attorney that was facing foreclosure, and she was also a forgery specialist, and she started to look at signatures and start to realize that these vice presidents had 10 to 15 different signatures.
Wow.
And it really prompted an issue, and then a lot of the stuff was dated incorrectly. And therefore, she realized then that they didn't have the documents that she had been asking for. But, you know, here they just all of a sudden decided to come up with the documents after they didn't have them at first. So that was kind of ironic. And these documents are no good, really. Basically, they're fraud. Okay, so they cannot connect the note and deed of trust back together using a fraudulent manner, if you know how to catch it. And most people don't know how, because who's going to question a person's signature? You ask for a document, they give it to you, you think it's a good document. You know,
so how would someone, layperson who doesn't know anything about mortgage, know if they have some documents in hand that are robo-signed?
Well, the first thing you have to do is get those documents, you look at them, you look at the dates. You first start to try to see if it was complicated for you to get the documents from the start, and then if all of a sudden they appear, you really need to check those signatures to see if the people that are signing are really officers of these particular banks. And there's ways that you can do that over the Internet by Googling that person's name and that particular company, and it will let you know then if that person has a track record of what you call robo-signing for other institutions. And then now you know you have a problem. So now you have a forged document. What do you do next? Okay. Well, what you have to do next after you've gotten the forged document, after you understand that your note and deed of trust have been separated, after you understand that the RESPA violations have taken place, after you understand the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act have been and Reporting Act, you're a victim of all of that, now you have to understand now what are your rights. Okay? Now, if you don't know the Constitution, you don't know your rights, but you have to get access to the legal system at that point. Now, most of us can't afford an attorney. okay, because they want big retainers to go in and defend us against these type of transactions. But most attorneys are not knowledgeable about securitization. And so if you go to a real estate attorney and think he's going to fix this problem, in most cases he has the same mortgage that you have.
Speaking of an article about this, isn't that article on your website?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
There's an article there on my website, which is our site is adreamconcepts.com. It's a very dynamic site, very informative, and we actually have all kind of articles talking about this situation as robo-signing. We also let you know about all the lawsuits that the 50 state attorney generals are bringing against these banks, and also Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the lawsuits that they file. Also, like our Dallas district attorney here, he's filed a lawsuit against MERS and Bank of America. So we really inform you through our site what's going on in the legal end of this catastrophe that we have that has affected this economy, that's affecting each and every one of our households, okay? But, you know, until you understand what's happening in the White House as far as laws and understand what's happening on Wall Street, you're not going to really understand what's going on your street, which is your house.
Okay. I agree. So they have robo-signed your documents, and let's just say you're smart enough to figure it out. What can happen after that?
Well, normally what you would do, you would contact an attorney and see if he has a securitization experience. If he does, you can get an audit that you would already have. I expect him to get one. Mm-hmm. That would then justify the paper trail of what took place in your loan from a third-party source. And now that attorney would normally file a lawsuit to quiet your title. And what that actually means is it says that this loan is no longer any good. This is an unsecured debt that's on this property, and this debt can't be enforced anymore, and basically you've been frauded against, and you have damages that are due you, okay? And once the attorney files that lawsuit, it gets the other side's attention. They have to go hire an attorney. Because if they don't answer that lawsuit within 20 to 30 days, they're in what you call default. You win, okay? Now, if they do answer, they have to either deny or admit to the things that you're alleging that they've done. They're going to always deny, okay? Now, they have to prove it. Okay, and that they didn't do these things, and you have to prove that they did. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is by saying, I did my qualified written request, this is what I got back. I did my dispute of debt, this is what you sent me back. I tried for a modification, this is why you denied me, or if you denied me. And if you gave me one, it was probably not a correct modification because the proper parties didn't even sign it. Most of the time we get a modification, we sign our papers, we send it to the lender. The lender never sends us an executed document back that they've signed. Right? Well, that's a contract, and a contract has to have an agreement of two parties. And if both of those signatures are not there, basically your modification is not effective at all. Okay. So once you make that claim, they have to answer, then basically what they're going to want to do now is give you a modification that you didn't have to qualify for if you would drop your lawsuit. Okay.
And in some cases, tell the listening audience how extreme some of these modifications can be.
Well, normally what they do, there's a company called NACA, for instance, that's going across the country and going to convention centers and saying they can help people get these modifications, and they'll get you to this big convention for 2 or 3 days, and they'll go talk to the banks about your situation, and they'll come back with a proposal where you have to pay a down payment of some sort, and then they will probably extend the term of your mortgage to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
They will bring the interest rate down some, or normally they keep the payments the same amount that they were, if you'd be willing to sign a new agreement. So now you don't went from, say you've been there 6 years, you had a 30-year mortgage, and now they're going to extend you now to a 40-year.
Wow.
I mean, it's really not a good deal for you. So you really got to understand on this modification, are they really giving you a true modification? But understand what modify means. It don't mean decrease. It don't mean, it just means change the term some. But normally it's going to work in the favor of the service. Not the investor and not you, okay? And it's their norm to buy you some more time, okay, until they sell your loan to a new servicer that don't know anything about that modification. It goes back to your original note and deed of trust and say, hey, I understand what you did, but this is what your note and deed of trust said.
So you actually shouldn't get in a modification thinking that you're going to ride that out for the rest of the term of your loan. You really should get in a modification thinking this is going to help me, like you say, buy some time until I can get my situation fixed, and then hopefully you can try. Well, meaning whether that you lost your job and you get a new job, or whether your credit has gotten bad and you have an opportunity to fix your credit. But at some point, you need to be trying to think about refinancing and getting out of the modification.
Yes, that's what you need to consider. But even on top of that, what you really need to consider is, do I owe these people that's claiming that I owe them? I know I owe someone, but
okay.
If people that I owe don't exist anymore, I'm not going to continue to pay somebody that don't have the power to enforce and don't have and really don't have the power to collect from me.
Now, Cedric, you thought, now, y'all, this is, you know, if you're not sitting down, you need to get a seat. Cedric, you told me that they tried to foreclose on your house in 2007. They were not successful. You're still in it and have not had to make a payment since then.
That is correct. I do have like $1 million property here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Back then, basically what I was doing, I was a home builder. And I was building $1 million properties all the way from like 2000 through 2007. And I would educate people on how to buy small properties for investing and so on so they could get the income to afford these type properties. And unfortunately, even with myself, in 2007, when the market crashed, I began to have financial difficulties and so on. And all of a sudden, I go into foreclosure. I started out with a company called Fremont Mortgage, and I ended up with Countrywide being my servicer. Okay, which I thought Countrywide owned my mortgage at that point. And I thought Countrywide should have been the one to foreclose, but for some reason or another, they did not. There was a company called MERS that actually foreclosed on my house. And I said, well, who is MERS? And I looked at my paperwork and realized that's the beneficiary. Then I saw someone bought my home at the sale, but it wasn't an individual. It was a company called it was Household Bank. I said, well, now, how did another bank decide to buy my house? But then this bank is saying they are the trustee over a trust account that my notes should have been in. And then that's when all this stuff started to come out, and I started to research more and more and realize that MERS didn't have the power to foreclose. So when it came time for them to evict, we proved that they did not have the power to foreclose, that they didn't have any interest in the loan. If I didn't pay MERS, they wouldn't have went out of business. It wasn't going to be affected in no kind of way, so they didn't have the power to enforce eviction. Okay, so now how do you fix this? If you have the wrong party that is foreclosed, they basically stole the title to my house.
Wow.
Okay. So how do we get this back now? So we had to file a lawsuit to quiet the title. At the same time, this trustee of this bank claimed that, well, we own the note. Well, you just proved that you bought the house at the sale, so how do you own the note? Okay, so it really created a problem here that they hadn't been able to fix. And therefore, you know, actually I have possession, which possession is 9/10 of the law, of a property that they cannot justify enforcing a note against because the note don't exist anymore.
Okay, so for anybody who wasn't sitting down, now you may need to sit down, and I'm gonna replay that one more time. You said you're currently in a $1 million house that they foreclosed on in 2007, yet you're still in, and you have not made a payment since then.
That is correct.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow. Okay. You got to show the rest of us how you do it. I'm blown away by the fact that these companies. I think I read somewhere, and I'm trying to find my notes on it. Someone, and I don't want to quote who it was until I find my notes, but it said 85% of the documents in your file are riddled with errors. Is that true?
That is true. When you look at the origination of the loan, I was a mortgage originator. I was a mortgage broker, and my thing was to get that person's signature on the dotted line as quick as possible. And a lot of times what had to happen to make these loans look appealing to investors, the companies that we did the loans for required that we make changes to those particular documents. And a lot of those changes were income information, banking information, and so on. And a lot of times that information wasn't quite correct. It wasn't quite true. But it looked good on paper to another investor that never would have seen the original documentation to back any of this up. So, therefore, a lot of misstatements were done in the origination part of the loan. Now, at closing, they normally would have a brand-new application that you'd sign. You never would have time to review the documents that were on that application and so on. And we had a motivation to get you to take higher interest rates. All right, we could normally give you a low interest rate, but they would pay us as brokers more money if we got you to take, you know, get you to take a higher rate. So we go back and tell you this is the best rate that we can give you. Your credit is not the best in the world, so you take this higher rate. Okay, so when you do that, now they pay us what you call a yield spread premium. That's basically money to make you, you know, take that higher rate. Or we can make less money and charge the consumer if we're trying to make money. So we had a lot of flexibility. So therefore, a lot of mistakes were made. And a lot of creative documents were done that shouldn't have been done in origination of the loan. and which that alone could negate the loan. But you'd have to get with your colleague for rented loan audit to tell what violations were done there, okay? Because the people, they did what the brokers told them to do. You know, if you wanted a loan, you...
is considered a violation, and each violation has a value connected to it. Is that what I'm understanding?
That is correct. And what you do, you come up with all the violations that you can and see what the monetary value comes out to. Now they owe you that, and you take that and balance it off against what they claim you owe them. And
wow.
A lot of times you come up
okay,
with
in doing out. That, you said in our pre-interview that could result in you getting a house with your loan balance forgiven?
That is correct, okay?
Play
so,
that.
So there's a possibility that could really happen, but, you know, you have to do your homework and do the due diligence to prove it, okay? And you can do that as you go through this process. So the next thing that you really want to kind of pay attention to once you do this now is, you know, you have taxes and insurance. You have an escrow that also has to be maintained against the property. You know, property taxes have to be paid, and if you're not making payments, through your mortgage company, that would have an escrow, that means the taxes are not being paid.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we have homeowners associations, too, and those dues have to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
The taxes and homeowners association really kind of takes the precedent over that particular mortgage. They make sure that they get their money, okay? But it hurts the counties when no one's making mortgage payments because no one's making tax payments, and therefore our school teachers are affected and so on, and affects this whole overall economy. So, you know, you have to really, really stay up on your taxes. And you also have to make sure your property, the insurance is there. Because what a lot of lenders do, they put their forced place insurance on you, which that alone can put you in a position where you can't pay your mortgage. Because normally it's going to be double or triple the insurance that you would have gotten. Okay?
Never let your lender find you any insurance. Because they go, I don't know where they go. It looks like they go to the moon to find an insurance company. And when they come back, it's really, really high.
Yeah, it's really high. And it's ridiculous. They don't even cover the house in full. I mean, they don't cover your contents and so on. So they're looking out for their interests at that point. And for some reason, I guess they just have higher rates than the general population, okay, and it's really wrong. But they put you in a position, if you're not proving to them that you have their property covered, they will easily slip that in right on you and therefore create another financial burden, you know, that you may have. If you don't pay your taxes, they will go and pay your taxes for you.
Yeah.
And then they give you 12 months to pay them back. And if you have a big tax bill and it's more than your mortgage bill, it's going to be impossible for you to maintain that property. So these are a lot of things that they do to us also that force us into a default situation. Bottom line, all loans that were done between 2000 and 2008 need to come off the market because they're what you call toxic mortgages, okay? And the way the banks make their money on
repeat
those,
that. All loans meaning A paper, meaning people with good credit, all the way to subprime lending, which are people who had challenged credit, you're saying all of those loans are considered toxic?
Yes, they are because of the securitization that took place. And say an A loan, for instance. Now, you had to prove your income. You had to get check stubs and bank statements and have everything good and great. But what they do, they take a portion of the A paper loans and they mix them with the subprime loans. So
wow.
You have three tiers of mortgages when you buy a securitization mortgage-backed security. And what happens, they claim, whereas the bad ones, which they pay more as far as the rate of return, stop paying, the good ones that are paying should kind of offset that particular investment, okay? But with the economy falling like it did, those that had A paper, their property values got affected, and therefore a lot of them just chose to go into default and let the properties go because it wasn't wise for them to continue to invest. And therefore the whole, I guess, mortgage-backed security went bad, and therefore the investor is not making the money that he was promised that he was going to make, so therefore he wants the insurance company to pay him. And the only way that can happen, you must go into default. So basically, these loans either have to be refinanced or they have to be foreclosed on.
Now, let me stop you right there. Because you told me a story on yesterday that there are people being foreclosed upon that are not even behind. So is that part of the problem, too, that these people are kind of in that category where they're in that toxic category and so they need them off the books and so they're getting everybody, those that are behind and those that are not behind?
Yes, based on what's happening, you do have people that have not missed a payment ever before, never. And somehow, sometimes you have three or four different investors that invested in that particular note.
Mm-hmm.
Some investors may be getting paid, but the other investors not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you know? All right, so, and a lot of times these investors don't know that these notes have been sold many times to different investors, okay? And therefore, if a person feel like he hadn't been collecting his money, he feel like, well, you're in default, and he don't understand that you paid someone else. And those records were never given to him. And he don't know, so therefore they call themselves making a mistake by foreclosing on you, okay? So that the insurer will go ahead on and pay off, okay? I've had instances where people that got modifications, and they get the modification, they'll sign it. They'll make their first payment. The next month, they get foreclosed on. Then the next following month, the servicer will collect another payment from them. And then the next thing you know, Fannie Mae steps in to evict them out, which is the insurer, all right? Because Fannie Mae ends up paying the loan off in full. At the same time, these people are thinking they had a modification, that they really did have one, but for somehow they just act like it didn't exist, all right? So they want to foreclose on them. So how do you fix that? Well, they already know you can't afford to fight them because you can barely afford to make the mortgage payment, okay? And that's why they have programs now like Cash for Keys, where if they happen to foreclose on you, they will go ahead and offer you $2,000 or $3,000 to help you relocate. Some banks now are asking you to let them foreclose, and then they will even lease the property back to you. Okay.
Now that's an event that you're behind. They're not just coming and asking everybody, "Would you like me to give you $3,000 to foreclose?" This is if you're behind.
Well, that's if you're behind, but what they're doing to the ones that are current, once again, Obama did about a month ago, said if you are current but upside down, we will refinance you. That's another way to get this loan off the market and get you to sign new agreements, okay? So bottom line is they got a program for everyone. It's just a matter of how they're going to do this, and I think in 2012, now they slowed down in 2010 and 11 with foreclosures because of all the lawsuits and so on, but the attorney generals are trying to settle by Christmas so that they can – the banks can now go ahead on and start the wave of the next million homes that's going to have to be foreclosed on throughout 2012 and so on.
Well, let's talk about what Dallas County District Attorney Craig Watson discovered and what he did in terms of trying to set the record straight or getting everything straight as far as what has happened or occurred in Dallas County concerning these type of loans. What did he do?
Okay, well, our district attorney here, which he's a fairly young guy, he started to look at the county records and the fees that mortgage companies should pay for recording mortgage instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked into this MERS thing and realized that they were beneficiaries and started to understand now they're also a recording company. And therefore, mm-hmm. they circumvented fees that should have come to all the counties across the United States. So when he got through adding up and doing his research, there was over $1 billion owed to Dallas County. So as he's a county official, he decided now that fraud had taken place, and he decided to sue the company called MERS and also their shareholder, which is Bank of America, for this particular $1 billion. When he did that, it got the attention of all the counties across the United States. And in Texas, they now have made that a class action type lawsuit where all the counties that can't afford to fight can join in this class action and therefore litigate to get their monies from MERS and Bank of America and so on.
Talking about billions of dollars.
That's correct, billions of dollars, okay? I mean, you just can't imagine how, this is big. But at the same time, you should be able to look in the county records to see who owns your note. But because MERS is there, you can't. And therefore, that's a violation of Texas law and recording laws, and therefore the lender will be fined significantly for each and every violation, okay? And that's how...
I was thinking, and I think I saw something on your website where it said that, we look at, the only person who's ever really gone to jail for a Ponzi scheme was Bernie Madoff, but in actuality, all of these loans are little Ponzi schemes.
That's
because
what they
all
are.
Of them have some degree of fraud in the way they are being done.
Yes, that is true. Bernie Madoff, he just actually frauded, I guess you could say, wealthy people out of their investment money. They had the means to do something about it, but most homeowners are just average ordinary people that work on jobs, and they are not educated and sophisticated enough to understand securitization and mortgages and all this, and they have just become victims. And, and I really feel like these bank CEOs and Wall Street should be made to pay for what they've done, and that's why they had the movement of all the churches and the Move Your Money Day from these big banks. Because we're looking at, really, like, say, the five big banks that created this. All those 300 subprime companies, those banks own those companies from the start. Those banks created this conspiracy from the start, as far as I'm concerned.
What banks are we talking about? Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, who else?
Citi, and also General Motors Corporation, GMAC, which is now called Ally Finance. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So they all
which is basically... Those are pretty much who's holding everybody's notes these days. I mean, really, and you know from being in the industry, we just watch all the banks, the little ones, just close in this really just about four or five big umbrellas out there holding up everything.
That is correct. And, you know, and that's why they say they're too big to fail. You know, if you look on my site, there's a movie there called Too Big to Fail that kind of explains all of this and how this was put together and what they did when they created this situation. So, you know, we just have to educate
ourselves. Let's talk about something that I found odd when I watched one of the videos on your site. It said that, and forgive me for getting the numbers wrong, but I'll give you the gist of what it said. The one person that they foreclosed upon, I think they owed something like $170,000. But the mortgage company was foreclosing, claiming that the people owed something like $240,000.
That is correct. Most of the time these figures are off because when you look at many services and you look at these adjustable rate mortgages, different companies adjust mortgages with different accounting techniques and so on. Different service companies charge different fees. You know, and by the time you try to get the true figure of what's owed, it's almost impossible for you to do so, especially when the originating company has gone out of business, so you really don't have any records there of what actually took place and what happened. So, you know, the figures are never really correct, so therefore you have to do an audit and ask for that payment history, and if you can't get it, then well, you don't owe it. You know, and that's where you have to look at that.
Wow. I guess it's just mind-blowing that your paperwork can be riddled with all of these errors, and yet when you talk to them, they talk to you like you're the problem and really give you no recourse. I mean, if you don't have the money to catch up whatever it is that they say you're behind, you're just foreclosed upon. Why do you think it is that the government hasn't done more?
Well, he who has the money rules the world. And a lot of laws have been changed when they came up with this Glass-Steagall law that allowed investment firms to become, you know, just like a bank and invest, you know, investors' monies and so on. It's the laws that have been changed that put them in a position to, you know, be able to do this. So now when you say do something about it, it's kind of tough when they control so much of the economic environment that we're in. When they say too big to fail, think about Bank of America going out of business. Who all would be affected? How many corporations would be affected? If AIG Insurance Company had gone out of business, who was going to be affected? I mean, and these banks have positioned themselves where it's like we you know, we have to keep them afloat because if they don't, things get worse than what they are. And therefore, it makes it kind of tough to prosecute somebody like that has created a problem. You know, even though they claim they did it within the laws, but there's a lot of laws that were violated. So who enforced those laws, though? And that's why we as people have to come together and we have to utilize our rights once again to make the courts recognize what is going on and be able to prove the truth. And the truth is normally the thing that's going to set us free.
Wow. So, I mean, okay, so the I guess I'm at a loss of words because I'm still trying to wrap my mind around. You come and foreclose on me and you know this paperwork is bogus, yet you're coming in and you're actually taking my home from me and you don't have any rights to do it, and yet the government is aware of it and nothing is being done. That still just makes no sense to me.
You have to look at it this way, though. The government was not there when you signed those mortgage papers, okay? And we've been as educated as we are, you know, a lot of times we overdid it, and so we have to take responsibility ourselves. As the Bible says, you know, the borrower becomes a servant to the lender, and you should owe no man. But now we've taken on this debt, and even though we've been used per se, and because of non-disclosure, and because of we've basically been tricked, or because of our lack of knowledge, and us not being professionals in the mortgage business or the securitization industry, that's why the laws are there to protect us. But what is the law? What is the law if you don't know how to enforce the law? Okay, so that's why we the people have to go amongst the courts, and as we learn these things and have these people dealt with and prosecuted. And if enough of us do that, believe me, they will have to change what has been done. And I think that's what's beginning to kind of happen, but we still have a long ways to go.
On your website, you say that they need a copy of the deed of trust. I mean, sorry, they need a copy of the note, the deed of trust, the current mortgage statement, and a transfer and servicing disclosure in order to even foreclose upon you. Is that true?
Well, now to foreclose on you, what they need is a copy of the note and a copy of the deed of trust.
Okay.
And normally they prove how much you owe. And really that's all they have to have. Now, before we show you what you need to do, we get the servicing and transfer disclosure so we can educate you first what the law said you can do.
Okay.
So now you know you signed that, and now you understand what you signed. Secondly, we want you to look at your note and understand what it looks like. So when we ask for another note, a copy of it, we can see if it's been altered or changed, or a pay to the order of stamp has been put on it to find out if it has been sold to someone. Then we look at your deed of trust so you can understand who your beneficiary is. If Murray's is there, or if the bank is there, you need to know who your beneficiary is. And that's why we start with those particular documents when we get ready to help you do this qualified written request, so you know what to ask for and what to question and know what to look for. Okay.
You know what's so odd about this whole situation is, if I today want to sell my car, the first thing I have to do is prove that I have a clear title.
Correct.
Why is it that something as big as a home, they would not have to show that they have a clear title before they're taking it from you?
Well, once again, the insurance industry is a big, big industry. The insurance industry is the one that created a mortgage. So what they do now, they have title insurance policies that you buy. And what they will do, they will be the ones to say, hey, this is a good deal or not a good deal, because they're going to insure the risk of it. So if there's something that needs to be cleaned up, they know most of the time most people are not going to challenge this. Very few people are going to challenge it, so they're not going to have to really spend a lot of money defending these titles, okay? But if they say it's good, it's good until someone challenges it, okay? And if no one ever challenges it, well, you just have a title. And that's why people that have been foreclosed on already, who have been illegally foreclosed on, if they can prove it, then they can actually bring a claim against that particular title insurance company. Because the person that bought the house is what you call a bona fide purchaser without notice. So he wasn't aware that the title wasn't any good, and he shouldn't have to suffer for what he's bought, because he did buy it through the laws and the system that we have here. But that title company, now they have to be responsible for making that title good, okay? And that's
okay.
Where the money is there to repay you for and compensate you for wrong that has been done. And then what the title company is going to do is normally, once they find out who did the wrong, they're going to go after them also to recoup their monies back, okay, such as your bank or your servicer that illegally foreclosed on you because they didn't have the proper paperwork to do so, or fraud paperwork to do so.
Now, we know everybody, I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I'm going to ask because, you know, I just don't know the answer to it. We know that every time you buy a home, if you're buying it through a lender, you have to have title insurance. Your title insurance doesn't cover any of this, right?
Well, no, that title insurance, when it covers you, it tells you that, hey, you have a good title. And if someone tries to ever challenge you, because if I sue someone today that bought my house, I'm going to sue that person. Well, what that person is going to do is go back to their title company and say, hey, I've been sued. This person said I don't have clear title. Now, the title company has to come up and defend that person and make sure they got good title, or either pay me off or whatever they have to do.
Okay. Okay, let's go back for anybody that may have tuned in late. To kick off or start the ball to rolling, when you first realize that there's a problem, you contact your mortgage company and you ask them for what?
Well, the first thing you want to do is contact them in writing once again through a qualified written request. There's a special address on your coupon that tells you where to send a qualified written request or a correspondence to.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know what you're going to ask for, like I say, you go back to the basics. I want to see my original note. I want to see the payment history from day one. I need to see all the assignments. I need to see all the servicing agreements. I need you to give me my payoff today, and I need this information within the time frame that the law says you're supposed to provide it. Okay? That's the first thing you want to do. That puts them on hold. If there's an attorney involved that's trying to foreclose, you do a dispute of debt through him and a validation of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And you send and ask for that same information. Now you have two people working on the same problem, okay, a debt collector and a servicer, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That would normally stop a foreclosure sale if they're trying to foreclose on you by a certain date. They shut it down indefinitely until they can provide you this information. If they foreclose on you without providing you this information, they basically violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices laws and so on, because you did bring this to their attention. And you must do all this in certified by certified mail, so you will be able to tell who and when and what took place. All right, so now you're gathering your evidence for your defense, okay, that you're going to use to sell this mortgage, okay? And you're not selling for a modification. You're not selling for anything until you understand who all the parties are. And that's the first thing you got to find out now. Who are all the playing parties, and who do I need to be talking to get this situation fixed? And that's what this qualified written request and dispute of debt will allow you to do. And then if you have the money, I would definitely say get that securitization audit. So when you ask these questions, you already have your answers in most cases, so you know if someone's not being truthful with you and so on, okay? So now you know what laws have been violated and so on, and you have to be prepared to get ready to litigate, to fight, okay? Keep in mind, you're not paying the mortgage no way, so you need to at least be getting some money set aside that you can litigate with And it's not that expensive to litigate because, believe me, they're not going to really want to fight you through the courts because they don't want to see a jury sitting there admiring all the violations that they violated against you because they've probably done the same thing with them. So they want to keep this out of court, okay? So bottom line, they're going to want to settle. Just like they're going to settle with the 50 state attorney generals. Just like they're going to settle with Craig Watkins. Like they're going to settle with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It ain't that you're going to beat the bank, but if you're wise, you can settle with them and get what's due you. Okay, and that's the only thing we're trying to encourage you to do here.
Now, you've been doing this for a while. What is your success rate?
Right now, we have approximately 1,800 customers or so. Success-wise, a lot of people have settled for modifications, but we made sure that the proper party signed. Some people have been foreclosed on, where they got their homes back in their names with reduced payments and reduced new contracts and all. And, which we have quite a few now in litigation because this problem hadn't really been out for years. This is something we discovered over the past, say, 24 months or so, 36 months. And litigation takes a long time. When you file a lawsuit, a lot of these things are going to be in court maybe 2 years or 3 years if you're actually trying to fight it through court. And that's why, like in Florida, they almost had to shut down the court system because of all the foreclosure cases that they had. Because in judicial foreclosure states, they must file a lawsuit themselves before they can foreclose on you. So knowing if the counsel serve you, you're going to answer, okay, and therefore the litigation begins. But they can't foreclose until they get a judgment and you have a hearing. But in like Texas, a non-judicial state, they just send you a notice. And if you don't answer that notice in writing within a certain amount of time, they assume you are on the debt and they go ahead on the foreclose and take the profit. They filed the Texas rules and procedure, and they didn't have to go through the court. So on time you go to court is when they get ready to evict you out. Okay.
Wow. Okay, so this is a non-judicial state. Those states that are judicial states, they're like where?
Ooh. Well, you have states like Florida. You have, let's see here. You got, a bunch of them. Florida, you got, I got a list of them. It's about about 30 states. Now, judicial-wise, let's see here. You got, some states are both, too. Now, let's get that right. Because if you have a home equity loan,
Like in Texas.
Okay, they have to file a lawsuit before they can foreclose on you.
In Texas, if you have a home equity loan, they cannot foreclose without
filing a lawsuit.
Wow, that's good to know. So that can help some people. So, it's so many, technical things about this process that you'd have to understand the paperwork. You'd have to, understand what to say to the mortgage company when you got them on the phone. You all use Legal Shield as your attorneys in part of this process, right?
Yes, I do. I really do. They have just been recently bought out here back in June, and they have actually really started to target foreclosure defense on top of the other benefits that they offer. But basically, this is one way that it's affordable for people to access the legal system because as a member, a member gives you uses and privileges here that you can utilize, such as making consultation phone calls and not having to pay for consultations, having letters sent out on your behalf, also reviewing your contracts that you will be signing, and basically giving you legal advice now up front about what your situation is and what you should do about it, okay? I love Legal Shield because they really make this affordable, and the attorneys there are great. And another good thing about them is that they have provider law firms in all 50 states. So no matter what state you're in or what city you're in, you always have legal representation for your membership fee, which is very minimal, which is approximately $30, $35 a month. Where can you find an attorney for that amount? And they do a lot of other services for you to help you get your home in order, such as giving you wills and updating those wills for you yearly for free. Trial defense if you need it, up to 60, 75 hours of attorney time, IRS audit service if you need it, already prepaid for, if you get traffic tickets and violations.
We know they do a lot. They're basically just a prepaid legal, same kind of setup as prepaid legal.
Yes, it is. What it really is prepaid legal is just a new name now, which is Legal Shield.
Okay, gotcha. So in order for someone to go through your company, they first need to sign up for Legal Shield.
Well, the first thing I want to do is make sure you understand your legal rights. We require that you sign up with Legal Shield so you can talk to an attorney about your rights. And I don't want you to take our word for this. We're just an education company. We're not here to give you legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get you to an affordable a portal that knows about this area of law that can help you and legally advise you, okay? And we also utilize them to help send letters out on top of the letters that you send. to give your letter more power when they see an attorney is representing you also, you know, to help you resolve this matter. Okay, so, you know, basically you just say, well, hey, Al, and when they call you, you answer the telephone. You don't avoid your phone calls. You just ask the bank, you know, will you go to your computer? I need to see if my qualified written request is there. When you answer my qualified written request, really I have nothing else to say. I mean, because until I get the information that I need, I'm not at liberty to discuss this matter with you anymore. Okay, everything must be done in black and white so that you can start to build your file that you're going to use as your evidence, okay, to, you know, help the hell, you know, get you a settlement. Okay, and that's the way you got to change your mindset, okay, because you have normally been frauded against, and Fannie Mae knows it, the Attorney General knows it, District Attorney knows it, why don't you, okay? So, you know, you're beating yourself up when you don't really have to. It ain't that you're not being responsible, because that's why you're trying and you're stressing about your home, okay, but you have to also be wise and understand what has happened to you, so therefore that can work in your advantage as you fix this particular problem. Okay.
On one of the pieces on your website, it says something that, you know, and I did, you know, I was a broker for many years, and I did a lot of subprime loans. In fact, that was one of my specialties. That said, you know, one of the pieces said that the customer partly is to blame because they bought homes that they couldn't afford. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do feel like a lot of customers bought homes that they could not afford, kind of like what, you know, like I was selling $1 million properties where the average middle-class American could not afford a property of that caliber. So I had to make sure they had the income. That's why I put them in the real estate business so they could leverage themselves through other properties to collect rental income to go along with their income. But a lot of people didn't get to do that. And they take on this big mortgage with the understanding that they got a low payment going in, not knowing in 6 months, within 24 months, the payment would start to escalate. And it basically become out of reach, and they couldn't afford to pay it anymore. So a lot of them did buy more house than they really could afford. And you had very creative loans out there called interest-only loans or pick-your-payment-type loans, and you could pay less than the interest that was required on that loan, and it with a big principal balance that, you know, you really couldn't afford to pay. So you, at some point, you lose the property. It's like gambling. It's like they set you up to fail, okay?
You know, and you said something about the modification yesterday that made me wonder if they're setting people up to fail. You said in a lot of the cases with the modifications, they're not even giving the customer any signed paperwork.
Yes.
Is that the game?
That is the game that they do, or if it's signed, you know, a lot of times they come to call MERS, and they will send a modification, and they have a place for MERS to sign off on. At the same time, the servicer would sign. But most of the time, they don't give you anything signed back. They'll have you to get your signature notarized, send the paperwork into them, and tell you to send the payment with it, but then they never send you an executed document with their name on it, a signature of someone that can stand behind that agreement, okay? And that's what it really puts you at a disadvantage here. Once again, it's fraudulent documents that they're utilizing. But, you know, but where you find these things out, you go to that same bank now, if it's Bank of America or whatever, and try to go open up a checking account or get a credit card or whatever and see, don't they tell you that you're behind on your mortgage and you're probably still in foreclosure and don't even realize it, okay?
Really?
And yes, because they actually have a side account that this money goes into that you don't, it's just not really going to touch your principal buy down or whatever here. So, and it's just a matter of time before they sell your servicing of your loan to someone else and they don't want to honor the agreement, then you're back in foreclosure once again. Okay.
Wow. Listen, y'all, I have a strong mortgage background, and my mouth is open tonight. I mean, because I guess I never really looked into this end of the mortgage game, and I am just in awe that they have gotten away with it. But understanding that a lot of the big banks that are involved in these scandals are also connected to the Federal Reserve, you know, you know that it's all just a big, like they say, a big Ponzi scheme. I mean, really, it's just like they had to know when they set up subprime lending that it was not going to last and that a lot of these people were not going to be able to keep these homes. They had to know that.
Well, they did, but the whole key to our system is taking nothing and making something out of it. Mm. When you start looking at the value of a home, it starts with a lot that's sitting there that's worth $5,000. Then by the time they put, you know, this structure on it, now they have to go to another area where they see another structure that was built and say, well, if we move this structure here, it's going to add value. And as soon as they can get someone to sign on a note and agree that that's worth it and they will buy it, now they just created money out of thin air, basically. And once you sign that note agreement, see, a note, you got to understand what that is. It's legal tender for all debts.
Mm-hmm.
When you have money and you look at your dollar bill, it says this note is legal tender for debt. and you see some signatures on that. When you sign a check, okay, you're saying that you're going to back this up. It's legal tender to pay for whatever services or whatever. Well, when you sign that note agreement, they immediately put a pay to the order of stamp on it, and they can sell that note. It's negotiable now. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you basically created money for them, for the system, and you know, and it's inflated money. Because a lot of these properties were not worth, especially if you got bogus appraisals that said the property was worth more than what it really was. So a lot of that went on also, okay? So a lot of people made a lot of money, you know, dealing with these type of mortgages. And even on the commercial end, when you look at these big commercial buildings, it really started with that, okay? So, and that's going to be the next crisis that hit us when you sell these office buildings and stuff start to come due and foreclosure and so on, and it's going to really, really affect the economy.
Wow, this is crazy. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight. We're talking about save your home. We're talking about save your home even after foreclosure. We're talking with Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown, a founder of AmeriDreams Educational Concepts. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, information, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. You know, one thing I found out about your company, you all don't like to use the term foreclosure. Instead, you all call it something else. What do you all call it?
Well, we don't like to really say foreclosure. Really, I don't want to see another foreclosure take place. And basically, I guess you can say, boy, how can I say this? Because that's just a negative word. And those things that we speak, you know, normally they will come to pass. But as a man thinking, so is he. But
okay.
We also want to make sure we keep things positive to just make you understand you just have a situation or an issue or misunderstanding that and, you know, the Bible says, all you're getting, get an understanding. And once we understand where we're at, and we understand basically how to attack this issue. And that's why we educate you, we encourage you, and then we empower you to do so because, you know, if you have the knowledge, then you know your rights, then you got a lot of weight and you got a lot working in your favor, you know, such as, you know, making claims with the Attorney General's office when you've been done wrong. How many times have we made a claim with the Attorney General's office? Well, we just don't stop and take the time to do it. How's our Attorney General going to know what wrongs have been done if we don't bring it to their attention? Okay. You know, so there's a lot of things that we have to do to make sure we keep this positive and make you understand it's just a home. It's brick and mortar. It's not, you know, the most important thing is your family and keeping your family together no matter where you're at, you know. But if you look in places like Florida and you see kids that are being bused from hotels that have to go to school or having to live in cars and we really think we have a problem, we have to really put things back into perspective and put our families first, put God first and our families and so on, and get our lives restructured again. So we're not here just as a foreclosure defense type company or a mortgage education company. We basically want to educate you about life and hopefully, you know, you get the foundation back where it needs to be because it's not really a big mortgage or expensive car or getting in a lot of debt, you know, and that's not what it's about. Even though we get educated through school, and we wonder why our kids don't want to go to school or why they don't respect the parents. Well, how can they respect us when we can't even keep a roof over their head, you know, or pay our mortgages or whatever, you know. But we got to understand this system is not designed for you to be able to pay that mortgage, okay. And when you commit to something that's going to basically kill you financially, kill you emotionally, you can only work so many years. You don't even look at the calculation when you sign for 30 years, how many years you're going to have to work and how much money that's going to really have to cost you to actually satisfy that particular debt with the kind of interest rate.
Okay, well, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up area code 972-298. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, dear. I'm glad. I'm doing good. My name is Gordon James.
Yes.
And let me say it this way. I'm a Cedric Brooks Brown fan.
Really?
Yeah, ma'am, I am.
How he has helped you? Or has he helped you, or are you just familiar
yeah.
with the company, or how do you know him?
He has most definitely helped me.
Really?
And, yes, he has. And one of the things, is, and let me just say this, that, and you kind of touched on it just earlier, and I was appreciative to Mr. Brown for his answer. You said basically have these people, you know, are these people you know, that have been foreclosed on, people that have had subprime loans and actually could not have afforded it from the start anyway. Mm-hmm. And his answer was that there are many, and that's just it, there are many, but not everyone. I was one that I was well under in my, the term is income to debt ratio. I was well under. I had no problem. I had excellent credit. They had to do nothing for me. They didn't have to give me any type of consideration. My loan just went through, I mean, perfectly without any. Matter of fact, my loan was so good, and not boasting, I'm trying to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
My loan was so good. I saw my house after looking for months. I saw my house on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I hand carried my loan paperwork after
mm-hmm.
going to the real estate company to Countrywide then. And on that Tuesday, 10 o'clock, I was back at the mortgage company picking up my keys. Countrywide said, this guy's loan, it's not a problem. It's a go. We can tell you that already, if everything he says in here is correct. Now, I went back by the mortgage company, picked up my keys, and Thursday I had the approval. Loans don't work like that, not mortgage loans.
I mean, they gave you the keys to the house before you closed?
Oh, dear, yes. I mean, the realtor and Countrywide, the particular person over Countrywide, that particular branch of Countrywide, had a good relationship. They saw my loan. Now, let me tell you this, too. I was a regional manager of a mortgage company, too. So I knew how to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, so that when I presented that loan, I knew that it was flaw-free.
Okay.
And it was not forged. I mean, everything was legitimate. And they looked at it and they said, if everything he says here is correct, it's good. Well,
okay.
I knew the realtor and he knew, you know, I had good credit and what have you. Income
okay,
to debt ratio was excellent. So I didn't need anything from a mortgage company. Now, everything was excellent up to a certain point. I've been in my house now about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw other folk without a home. And I started making, getting people off the street, making house payments for them and what have you, stronger than what I could. I was in trouble before I recognized it.
Wow.
And next thing I know, I had to shut it off. But by that time, I was in trouble. Someone knocked at my door and said, gentleman was very nice, very kind, so much so that I was nice to him when he did it. He said, sir, I know you're getting ready to lose your house. I can save your credit. Well, by that time, I had wrecked my credit. He couldn't have saved it anyway, but I understood his point. So I was just as nice to him as he was to me, and I said, sir, I appreciate you. I said, but I'm not going to lose my house. Now, I had no idea how I could keep my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I was praying, and saying, what can I do, and I finally made the move.
Well, let me ask a couple questions just so we can be clear.
Okay.
How far behind did you get?
Well, I was mad at the third month.
Okay, so you're 90 days past due.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so
what is your notice.
I want the listening audience to be clear on what you're saying. So the mortgage company is doing what at this time? Are they offering you a modification or are they not offering you a modification? What's happening at this point?
No, it's just straight out flat foreclosure notice.
Okay. And did you try to do a modification or did you not even try that?
Well, at that particular time, I had tried earlier and didn't.
Okay.
And then at this particular point where I'm talking about now, I was at the point of it's just a straight out. I'm in foreclosure. I've got a number of days.
Okay.
Foreclosure is already on the books.
Okay.
And it's just, I mean, on the books, you know, for them to foreclose. And it's just, I'm waiting on, that's why this gentleman knew about my house. I'm on the foreclosure list. And so I was just bent on, I'm not going to lose my house. Okay. Thing hit my mind was to file bankruptcy. So I went to do that. Now, I'm making, at that time, an $1,100 a month note.
Okay.
And now, design, I'm telling you, I'm not guessing at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by design, you are supposed to foreclose. Mr. Brown often says this, it's not a case of if you need help, it's a case of when you're going to need help.
Okay.
Because it's coming. Even people that's in good shape, that thing is specifically designed to finally get you to the point to where as you said, we don't have to nickel dime this thing out with payments and interest, foreclose on it, and we'll have the house, and we'll have the money, and Fannie Mae would pay it off and what have you. But anyway, what I did, I filed a bankruptcy. Now, they took my $1,100 a month payment. They literally went to the banks, bankruptcy courts. Okay, first of all, they took my $1,100 a month payment in this process.
But let me tell you,
because
I think we're becoming confusing. When you went to bankruptcy, did you take the house? There's a way that you can do a bankruptcy and you take the house in the bankruptcy, and then there's a way that you don't have to take it in the bankruptcy. Did you include it in the bankruptcy?
No, I definitely included it because the whole deal for filing the bankruptcy was to save the house.
Gotcha.
So I was
okay.
Getting the stay of lien.
Okay.
Okay. The mortgage company raised my payment to
mm-hmm.
$1,500. Well, if I got a problem already,
if you can't pay it at $1,100, you're sure going to have a problem at $1,500.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then they lied to the bankruptcy courts and said he's $20,000 behind. If I was $20,000 behind, then they would have foreclosed on me long before now.
Okay, so how behind were you actually? Because we're trying to also establish how erroneous some of these numbers are that the mortgage companies will be using. How far were you actually behind?
Okay, so we're talking at 3 months at $1,100. Actually, I think I was $1,139 or whatever, but bottom line, $3,400.
Okay. So you're $3,400 behind, and they say that you're $20,000 behind.
$20,000 behind.
Okay.
Well, now, the first thing I would think, and I didn't know this at the time, I'm just filing bankruptcy, finally getting with the bankruptcy attorney, I'm told about the $20,000. Whoa, wait a minute, hold on, $20,000. Sir, don't you understand that if I was $20,000 behind, they would have long ago, well, we need to go ahead and do what we need to do to stop this. So I was bent on stopping it, and then I said, I'll have to deal with whatever I have to deal with, but I want to stop this foreclosure. So I did the bankruptcy and filed the paperwork. Now, what was $1,100 and some dollars that just became $1,500, on the tail end of the bankruptcy court, every month they're pulling out $962. So I just went from 15 now to 25.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And bankruptcy was supposed to save me. So I fought with that for some time. And there was a young lady, I had a friend, actually the president of my mortgage company, when I was a regional manager of a mortgage company. He told me about a young lady, and he said, well, he told me, first of all, he said about some investors and what have you. And then he said, oh, I want to tell you about this young lady. So I met her. They introduced me. She took me down to AmeriDream Educational Concept. And where
okay,
I got,
that's where you met our guest tonight, Mr.
Exactly.
Brooks Brown. And what happened?
Okay. One, as you said, Educational Concept. He first of all, he said, well, we're going to stop this thing. And he said, we're going to do it through education. Okay.
Okay.
First thing he did was a qualified written request, which shut down everything.
Okay. Now we got to take another caller, so speed it up for me.
Okay.
Okay.
I started making, shut down all payments to them because I had to trust, I mean, I couldn't make it no way, I had to trust that this thing would work. I shut down all payments to them.
So wait a minute, let me be clear again. You're in bankruptcy.
Yes.
So we know that if you don't follow your bankruptcy, whatever they call what the situation is when you're in bankruptcy, if
mm-hmm.
you don't follow their payment plan, doesn't that automatically mess everything up?
Oh, it does. And
it's like
and,
in a Chapter 13, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
and,
you
and,
not follow the payment plan?
Well, I mean, I did for so long, but once I met Mr. Brown and understood the process, yeah, I stopped making my regular payments to the mortgage company. And then after I had been there for a while and then had the confidence that, yeah, this thing works,
mm-hmm.
after his addressing a number of things with the mortgage companies, and I realized this thing works, I shut down the payments to the bankruptcy court. They shut me off, killed the lien of stay. I'm rushing now and just hitting
okay.
the points.
Okay.
Bank of America turned around, sent me letters of how they were going to now foreclose. Then and at the same time, Mr. Brown was involved. So now they get their attorneys involved. Got to be home run hitters. We're talking Bank of America.
Okay.
Big attorney. They get the attorneys involved. The attorneys tell me now how they're foreclosing on me. Mr. Brown's addressing, giving the rebuttals. And then the attorneys for Bank of America, they back off, give it back into Bank of America's hands, let them handle it, because they couldn't do anything with it. And so 16 months now, I've taken that stand. No, I am not making payments to you until you can produce the note. And
okay, so let's be clear. Again, it's 16 months later, and you have not made a payment in 16 months to Bank of America.
And will not.
And will not, and they have not foreclosed on you.
They have not foreclosed. I've gotten constant letters. They've dropped one attorney. Now they've picked up another one. I just got a notice a couple of days ago. I have to get that to Mr. Brown. But number one, remember, I'm not making payments. And I just got a notice where they're saying I've got about four payments that failed to clear. Now we're building up fees. I don't have a payment that failed to clear because I've never had an automatic payment in place. And I'm not making payments to you, but by design, they have to keep these high fee deals going.
Okay, so they're almost basically putting together paperwork that says your checks are not clearing, even though you have not even been sending payments.
Precisely. And so what I'm saying is, yeah, there are constantly things that falsification is what it really amounts to.
Okay. And you're keeping your documentation, of course.
Oh, most definitely. Matter of fact, I submit everything to Mr. Brown.
Wow. Well, thank you, caller, so much for your testimonial. Wow, Mr. Brown, that is definitely a plus in your corner. Thank you so much, caller.
Ma'am,
okay, we're
going
to go to area code. I'm losing my place here. I think it's 214-371. Good evening. You're on center stage. Let me open your light. 214-371. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Good.
My name is Russell Williams, and just wanted to let you know that I'm a managing director and a senior rep for the company, for the Mayor Dream. But I'm calling in because I'm also a client. And I'll make this really quick.
Okay.
I sent out my first qualified written request in July of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So from 2010 to now, I have not made a mortgage payment, and they cannot foreclose on me. As a matter of fact, I just had a lawsuit filed a couple of weeks ago, so now that's going to take another 6 months.
You know, I don't know how y'all – I mean, really, I said this at the beginning, this sounds too good to be true. I would be afraid to leave the house because I would just be afraid that when I came back, my stuff would be sitting on the curb. You have no fear of that whatsoever.
We're doing this under a federal law that they
are supposed
to comply with.
Right.
We're doing nothing illegal.
Wow.
So I'm not in fear of anything. As a matter of fact, you gain a different kind of strength
mm-hmm.
when you know that you have the law before you, behind you, beside you.
Wow.
And they have to respond.
This is incredible. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. I mean, it's such good news for people who may be depressed going into this holiday season, worrying about, you know, facing a foreclosure in 2012 possibly. This is such great news. I mean, really. And so you have not made a payment since when in 2010?
Since July 2010.
Wow. Okay, wow, that's incredible. So over a year.
Yeah, well over a year.
Well over a year, almost a year and a half. Wow. Well, thank you so much. What was your name?
Russell Williams.
Wow. Well, thank you, Mr. Williams, for calling in tonight. Another testimonial, Mr. Brown. What incredible stories we're hearing. Okay, we're going to go to area code 214-862. Good evening. You're on center stage. Area code 214-862. Good evening. You're on center stage. Okay, we've opened somebody. 214-862, last call. You're on center stage. Well, Mr. Brown, those are great testimonials.
Okay. Well, I just want to clarify a couple of things on those.
Yes.
When you start looking at bankruptcy could really solve this problem. But most
speak up just a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I was saying, really, bankruptcy could solve this problem for a lot of people, but the bankruptcy attorneys are not willing to challenge the system. Okay. Because when you file for bankruptcy, they charge you $3,000 to $3,500 to do this. And you have to pay these attorneys out over time. But there's two types of bankruptcies that you can file for consumers. There's Chapter 13 and also a Chapter 7. And I'm telling you from experience because I've had to file those before, okay, in my early life. And basically, 13 is a reorganization. chapter 7 is basically where you surrender the properties and whatever. Mm-hmm. All right, but when you try to reorganize, that means that you're going to have to make the payments on those secured items, such as a house or a car. Okay, and they have to give the courts a proof of claim. And the proof of claim is they have to give the note, the deed of trust, and also any assignments, and also the actual amount that you owe. Mm-hmm. Your bankruptcy attorney, see, all he would have to do is challenge the assignment, the signatures, challenge the note, and ask who owns this particular debt that this servicer is submitting as a claim.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't do it. Because mm-hmm. if they do it, you're going to find out that the debt is really unsecured, and it can be discharged as an unsecured debt. And therefore, now, it's not a secured debt, so it can't be enforced against the property. So basically, they could wipe out the whole loan. All right, but at the same time, you know, they are attorneys, and they have to work with the banks and so on, so they do not address that. But a lot of them are not trained to do so.
Really?
So keep in mind, now, the federal court, the bankruptcy court, that's the debtor's court. They are supposed to be there to deal with debt. And you can actually deal with this in that particular arena versus having to go to state court or district court and so on and fight it out in a lawsuit. Okay, and it's a lot really less expensive if you could fight it on that end. But once again, we have limited people that, well, see, judges have a lot of power. They have the power to modify that mortgage if they want to, okay? You know, but you have to let them know that you know, and there's a bunch of things that can be done. But once again, most attorneys just don't know, and they don't want to get into that area because it's more work for them now. They don't have time to do a qualified written request or a dispute of debt, get a securitization audit and all that kind of stuff, and it can get quite expensive. And they just don't take the time to do that for their particular clients. Now, you have few attorneys that do. They have special trainings that they have to go through across the country to be in a position to know how to fight this through bankruptcy. So, but bankruptcy is really not the answer because, once again, you're paying a debt to someone that you shouldn't be paying it to. And a lot of times this debt has already been paid off and extinguished in full. And therefore, you know, you really need to get the truth before you start to make any commitments, okay? A lot of times we panic and we do things, something like a bankruptcy to go ahead on and take care of us for a moment, but most bankruptcies don't complete, and therefore you're back at square one anyway, and you've given away a lot more money at that time.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah, so. But,
if you just tuned in, you come center stage for tonight's topic. We're talking about how to save your home even after foreclosure. We're talking to Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown, founder of AmeriDreams Educational Concepts. If you have a question or a comment about tonight's topic, get on the phone lines. Let us know what you think. I am just amazed. I thank God I have not ever been in a position to face foreclosure, but I have friends that have, and it's a very scary time, and I'm just amazed at the things that you say can be done just by having a little knowledge about what to say and what to do when the big banks come after you. I mean, it's incredible that they would be giants and be taking homes from the small man. That's the part that's so surprising. He who has so much is intimidating the little man to get more. That's just crazy. But MERS, you know, what you said earlier, they have done this to every county in the United States, which is crazy.
That's correct.
I mean, so obviously they know how much power they have, or they would not have just, I mean, I don't know, just gone into every county. I mean, and just basically they did not even use the county clerk's office, if I'm understanding you correctly, in each county. They just basically electronically registered all these documents themselves.
That is correct. And, you know, when you say why should they be afraid, or think about it now, look who the investors are. You talk about Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, you got AIG, you got Merrill Lynch, you got all the elite companies of the United States. That's basically their backers. So that's a lot of power, okay? And now that, you know, a few laws have caught them, I mean, those same backers now, they are still fighting this thing. And what they're doing now, they're just stepping up to the forefront and still trying to utilize laws to make it legal. But once again, it's kind of like having a stolen car, and you try to take that stolen car now and make it legal, it's almost impossible until it gets back to the original owner, okay, that actually has true title. And that's why this is such a big problem now. You know, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the Occupy movement, Wall Street and so on, and I know Tuesday back December 7th they had a big movement about.
Did we lose you? I think we lost him. We're having some rain in the Texas area today, so There's a lot of weather problems going on in this area, so we'll see if we can get him back on the phone lines in just a second. But if you just tuned in again, like I said, you've come center stage tonight, wow, for a great show in which we've been talking about how to save your home even after foreclosure. We've been talking to Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown, founder of Marriage Dreams Educational Concepts out of Dallas, Texas. And this show has just been incredible. It's been a wealth of information. And we want you, of course, to do your own due diligence and researching for yourself about anything that Mr. Brown has said tonight. We have him back on the line. And, Mr. Brown, you encourage everyone to go and do their own research, correct?
Yes. Look at your original paperwork. Go find it. Go pull it out. Look at your deed of trust. Look at your note. Look at the transfer of service and disclosure. And then once you do that, get on your computer and Google MERS. And start finding out, do lawsuits against MERS, do lawsuits against Bank of America for mortgage fraud, and start seeing what's really going on around you. And then you can also go to YouTube and pull up 60 Minutes, the foreclosure crisis, and see what they have to say. And all this information is there. I mean, the Wall Street Journal have many articles about this situation. They're really keeping us informed about what's really happening. They're letting us know about the problem, but who has the solution? Well, Obama can't fix this. He was not there in the beginning. I mean, he came on the scene, and he's tried to do some things to help what are in his power, but basically the people are the ones that's going to have to stand up and make some demands. And since we are the masses, we have to get educated and know how to pull together. This is not a civil rights problem anymore. This is a constitutional right problem. Everyone's being affected, you know, and that's why we give these free seminars at Marriage Dream Educational Concepts. You get to go to our websites and you get to see where we're doing these seminars, when they are free, and we want to encourage you and give you this information so in one portal where you can get it and understand it and start to deal with your problem. I mean, we have doctors that are our customers and a lot. We have ministers. A lot of these people were not behind on their mortgages, but they got behind when they started to realize that they had partaken of a bad, you know, illegal situation, and they are now searching for the truth, and they want justice, all right, you know, because wrong is just wrong. I mean, I have an older lady that's been in her home 27 years. She had 3 years left to pay on her mortgage when she came to my company, and she's elderly now, and they just foreclosed on her last month and said she owed $91,000, and now they're offering to her.
Wait, to be clear, back up, you said she was down to her last 3 years on her term.
That's correct.
And they foreclosed on her?
Keep in mind, now, she only financed $58,000. Never missed a payment. You know how old school are. They keep up with everything. I see all of her documents and receipts. Now they said she owed $91,000 and foreclosed on her. Okay, some new investor bought a loan and foreclosed on her. And, you know, and I think that's really, really, really bad. And like I have to educate her, she had first gone and she had filed bankruptcy before she came to see us. And she's saying, but I just do not owe this money. And they're getting. I say, well, tell you what, just stop making the payment. They foreclose, okay? See, foreclosure is not the end. It's the beginning in most cases. A lot of foreclosure defense attorneys can't do anything against that lender until they foreclose. It's kind of like you have in a department store and people in there shopping. They can pick up all the merchandise. They can go towards the door if they want to. Just don't go outside the door. Now you've stolen, okay? Well, when they foreclose and don't have the proper documentation and paperwork, they've stolen from you. So now you have to actually utilize the law to prove that, and basically you can redeem that back and punish that individual for stealing from you, okay? And that's, if you want to look at it in a simple version, and that's what, you know, you need to think about. We know we owe. We owe someone. When we sign those papers, we know that we owe. But if we don't know that individual that's trying to collect, you should not have to pay, and that person cannot enforce that loan against you, and if you know your rights, okay? So that's what this is really all about, educating you of your rights. And then giving you access to the legal system in an affordable manner where you can actually demand your rights and get justification for what has happened to you, okay, so you can get back on track. And it turns out to be a blessing in a lot of cases for many, many families. You know, the Bible speaks of a wealth transfer. It never tells us how that was going to take place. But those that are wise, a lot of times, he gives us dominion over this land, and we need to keep a home because home is where the heart is. And if you don't fight for your home, you know, what do you have? I mean, that's where your family lives. That's where your memories are. Your kids grow up there and so on. That's very important. And don't think you cannot afford to fight. A lot of people say, I can't afford to do this. Well, you cannot afford not to do it. Because, see, when they foreclose, once again, that's just the beginning. They're going to buy your house back for less than what they claim that you owe. Mm-hmm. The difference, they're going to sue you for that, all right, at some point in the future. They got up to like 4-year statute of limitations to sue you. And then they're going to do a discovery on you to try to find ways that they can get their money.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a judgment against you. Not only are they going to sue you, they're going to normally 1099 you also for that money that you that they didn't collect and say you collected it and you made profit. And you have to add it to your income tax. So now you have an IRS issue. All right? So it's not the end once a foreclosure takes place. You think you can just walk away and it's going to go away. That don't happen that way. I mean, I have customers right now that are being sued as we speak from houses that they have let go into foreclosure and they walked away from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the house is gone, so I say, well, let's make it go away. Let's go back and fight. If we prove that the foreclosure was illegal, now they probably owe you money back or owe you the house back.
Mm-hmm.
But we can reverse this situation if you just take the time to investigate, and it's not that expensive to do so. Now, we made our program very, you know, expensive. You know, it runs
okay, anywhere. That was my next question. Tell me, what do you all charge to do what you do at your company? Because there's three programs available through your company, right?
Yes, we have three programs. One is a silver program, and that's for a person that's not facing foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
We charge $2,500 for this process, but
mm-hmm.
we let you pay as you go. Since there's a 90-day process, normally that RESPA, you know, have to follow, well, we let you pay that out in 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that and break it down into three payments. Keep in mind, you're not paying a mortgage, you're not paying a bankruptcy, so therefore the money is there, but it's there to pay for your educational program. You know, when you pay money to go to college, you don't pay with a guarantee that you're going to get a job, but you now have the education to go get that job. Well, you now have the education to now go claim your rights as you have gathered this evidence, okay? And then we have a program called the Gold Program. That's
mm-hmm.
for a person that's behind on his mortgage, and also he's facing foreclosure, and there's an attorney involved that's trying to foreclose,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we, in turn, not only do the qualified written request, the securitization audit, we also do a dispute of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Platinum Program, which that's designed for us to do the qualified written request, the dispute of debt, the securitization audit, and also we do an extensive credit restoration on you to put you in a position. So if you have to go out and get other monies to come back to the seller with, you can. You know, if a bank want to sell with you and they say, well, you owe us $150, we'll take $100. Well, you can come back and say, well, I tell you what, I got $75 that I can go get you cash right now, and you don't even have to finance it. So you make a sweeter deal, sweeter. So, you know, and plus you get your name back and clear your credit up, not for you to go get in a bunch of debt again, but to just reclaim your name back, because really this mortgage is a big burden on your credit, and it normally has circumvented you from being able to pay your other debts. You know, and I do blame the mortgage industry for this financial breakdown that we have in our economy today. Everyone's going to be affected. I mean, our children are being affected, you know, our counties are being affected, and our property values are being affected, our jobs are being affected because of this. Because what if you lost money in your pension fund because they invested your retirement in a mortgage-backed security,
absolutely.
And now you can't retire? You know, we had Enron to take place here, and that was kind of like practice of how they were going to do this throughout the United States, utilizing mortgages, okay? And when they shredded the paperwork, the evidence didn't exist no more. When the company went out of business, who could you sue to get your retirement money? All right, but one thing we do know, the Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citi, they're not going to be going out of business anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to get on this now and go ahead and get your claims in place so you can start getting some kind of settlement of some sort, because now this is not going to go on forever. This is the first time that we've ever had a problem of this caliber. But it's kind of like we're going back to the Depression days where they would give you mortgages they know you couldn't afford, and when that balloon came, you went into default, and then the insurance companies would take the bank, the houses back. Well, the insurance companies are doing the same thing today when they have to pay off on these loans that you couldn't pay on.
Absolutely.
So the same thing is history's repeating itself all over again. It's just a different way, okay, different generation.
Well, we're down to our last 7 minutes of the show. You know, in closing, what is it that you would like to say to someone who's facing foreclosure today? What would be your advice to them?
Well, first thing I would say, life gives you what you fight for, and it gives you what you accept.
Mm.
All right, if things that you fight for are important to you, there's ways once you are educated. You don't want to fight with sticks and stones and guns. We're past those days. We have to fight now with wisdom and knowledge and intelligence and utilize the law, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the truth, once again, the truth will set you free. You know, start, you know, we have these seminars. They are free. We're going to be giving one this weekend here at our headquarters at 3030 LBJ Freeway here in Dallas. You can give us a call. You can go to our website. Seek this information out and look at your information so you can get the truth. I mean, like when we read the Bible, if you're not going to understand the Bible until you start in the beginning. And when you understand how something was created, then you can understand now why it's in the state that it's in. You can find out what went wrong and where it went wrong. But you normally have to go always back to the beginning. That's why I have two names. You know, I had a great stepfather. He adopted me. He trained me. But then I found out really I was a brown, so I had to go back and see where I originated from so I would understand who I am so I could fulfill my purpose. Well, a mortgage has a purpose to fulfill. And if some things were done and things were not disclosed to you, you cannot fulfill something that you didn't understand. Okay? So you need to get an understanding. So this is pretty biblical. I'm not trying to preach to you tonight, but these are the things that I would tell a person. Just get your priorities in order. You know, keep in mind.
Absolutely. Let's try to take one more phone call before we get out of here. Area code 214-371. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hello, Ms. Hines?
Yes.
Hi. I had called in earlier. This is Rossell Williams. I just had one more comment to make.
Yes, sir.
Our program is geared. It's such a beautiful program under this law, RESPA law, because you don't have to be in foreclosure to get in this program.
Mm-hmm.
In my situation, I was current, but it's closed. But it's not about your standing with your mortgage company. It's about the fraudulent activity that took place behind the scenes. So if you just have a mortgage, you need to look into our program.
Yeah,
wow.
Everybody. True.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling back in and adding that. I do appreciate that. You know, this has been, listen, y'all, I've learned so much tonight. I mean, and I'm somebody who is mortgage savvy, if you will, and I have learned more tonight about just, what you want to call the back end of mortgage. I did not know this many things were going wrong in a business that really is supposed to be so much about keeping things very much against fraud. If a customer, believe it or not, commits fraud in getting the loan, then they go to jail. And so it's very ironic that the lender, who is supposed to be above board, is doing so many things illegally after the loan closes, and yet nobody in that industry seems to be going to jail. It's absolutely crazy. I'd like to say thank you to my guest, Mr. Cedric Brooks Brown, for being with me. Again, he's the founder of AmeriDreams Educational Concepts here in Dallas, Texas. Cedric, tell them how to get to your website, what your phone number is.
Okay,
can you give that information out?
Yes, I can. My website is A Dream, like you have a dream. Everyone has a dream. adreamconcepts.com. You can give us a call at 214-646-1450, and I can't remember what my 1-800 number is, but it is on that website at adreamconcepts.com, once again.
Okay. A reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, a reminder, y'all, this Friday night, join us Friday night, our normal time, December 16, 2011, from 8 to 10 p.m., as we discuss the topic on Black and Republican. Mr. Robert Woodson is going to be with us, and trust me, that is going to be a very good show, as was tonight. In closing, again, I'd like to say to Mr. Brooks Brown, thank you so much for being with me. To the audience, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And hopefully tonight's show gave someone who's facing a foreclosure a chance to think about, well, maybe there is a rainbow at the end of all this going on. So hopefully if you have not looked into this, you can call Mr. Brooks Brown and get more information, or you can take it upon yourself to dig deeper into the subject and learn what your rights are. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here. I've had fun tonight. I've learned a lot. I hope you did too. We'll see you again on Friday night. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.